You're listening to Nick Luck Daily, bringing you the latest news and the best interviews from around the world of horse racing. This episode is brought to you by the Racehorse Owners Association, by Thoroughbred Racing Commentary's Global Rankings in partnership with the Saudi Cup, and by the Fitzdares Club.
Well, morning, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. It is Tuesday, June the 15th, and I'm joining you from Ascot Racecourse. You can probably hear the gentle hum of contractors getting the last bits and pieces ready ahead of what promises to be a fantastic week. There is a little bit of light cloud overhead, but we're already up to 19, 20 degrees. It's set to be very warm this afternoon, and the place looks magnificent. Festooned in all the Union Jack bunting and expecting a full crowd today of 12,000, which is as much as the government will allow. More of that later, because last night, as expected and as predicted on this podcast, Boris Johnson announced a month-long extension to the current COVID restrictions. What impact will that have on racing? We need to consider that as we consider what impact a successful pilot here at Ascot might have on the next few weeks. We'll also be reacting to Jim Bolger's comments yesterday. He reiterated his concerns about doping in Ireland and the use of steroids. Ireland's anti-doping chief, Lynn Hillier, will join me later in a bid to assuage global concerns over Bolger's remarks. But we must start here. This great showpiece, this wonderful combination of the ancient and the modern that is 5 days of Royal Ascot, as I welcome in Cornelius Lysett. Cornelius, I'm in the best place this morning, and I'm sure you are about to be.
Really looking forward to it. The sense of anticipation, because there was a bit of sort of concern exactly how many people were going to get in, what horses would be here, et cetera, et cetera. So I feel the sense of anticipation has been lasting quite a long time. But over the last day or two, when the declarations came out for day one, which many believe is the, you know, is as good a day's flat racing as takes place in Britain, perhaps in Europe, certainly during the week, all the way through the year. And as the decks came out, you saw Palace Pier, you saw Wesley Ward, with runners, you saw Batash returning, as you saw a St James's Palace Stakes. I don't have any arguments with our colleague Lee Mottershead very often, but he said he wasn't that excited the other day on the pod about the three-year-old races. I don't think I've misquoted him there. I couldn't be more excited by the St James's Palace Stakes, and I'm sure Lee is joining me in being really excited about a really terrific St James's Palace Stakes. With Poetic Flair, with so many horses that have finished behind him in one of the three Guineas in which he's participated, and with the contenders from the Heron Stakes as well. And I'll tell you what, Nick, I backed a winner already today because I communicated with a friend of mine by emoji about what my tip of the day was. And I won't tell you. I'll tell you at the end what the horse is. But he got it first time. I was so chuffed.
Well, do you want to send me the emoji now?
Right. I'll tell you what. I'll send you the emoji. Yeah. Well, you get all the other guests sorted out.
And I will try and guess by the end of the show. Cornelius, you mentioned the St James's Palace. You mentioned Poetic Flair. If he wins today, there's an added piquancy to that, isn't it, given what we heard on this podcast yesterday from Jim Bolger?
Yeah, and what we've been hearing from Jim Bolger really quite a lot. And clearly, this extraordinary achievement by the Bolger operation to have Poetic Flair and Max Swinney competing at the very, very top at the moment as owners, trainers, breeders, and if you include the son-in-law, riding the horse as well. If Poetic Flair does follow up today, then clearly there will be further questions, I would imagine, to Jim Bolger about his assertion about drugs cheats. This is a story that isn't going to go anywhere, is it? It's gathering momentum. And as soon as he mentioned Lance Armstrong in a quote last weekend, I think that really struck home really hard.
Well, much reaction to yesterday's podcast. And as a result, I've been talking to Lynn Hillier, who is the head of anti-doping for the Irish Horse Racing Regulatory Board and the chief veterinary officer. And I began by asking her, in light of Jim Bolger's remarks, what reassurances she could give the racing public globally that everything was being done to catch people who were not playing by the rules?
Nick, we're committed to the highest standards of integrity. That's our job. It's what we're here to do. And if we weren't doing that, we may as well go home. We are completely focused on equine anti-doping. It was the reason I was brought in the first place back in 2016. Since then, we have done nothing but increase our testing. And it's not just the numbers, it's the quality of the testing as well. So it's a well-worn phrase, but the right sample, right horse, right time. But it's never been more true. We have access to horses in a way that no other regulatory authority does through, I think it's been well publicised now, we have authorised officer status. That literally means that we can extend our activity from our licensed yards in terms of following horses that may not be there, that we thought might be there. And it means that we can both inspect and test on unlicensed yards. So pinhookers, breeders, consigners, pre-sale, pre-training. That is unparalleled in terms of how we can both find and test these horses. And I think it's testament to how serious we are about it.
Can you talk to me a little bit about hare testing, how long that's been going and what it entails and what it can show you that ordinary urine testing can't?
Yeah, of course. I've been involved with hare testing since it was really first developed back in 10, 15 years ago now by LGC. They were at the forefront then and they're at the forefront now of hare testing. So they began their business, in fact, testing anabolic steroids in other matrices. They moved to develop the hare testing for specifically for anabolic steroids when I started with them back in 2005. That work continues unabated and we're having the benefits of it now that we can put it into operations on a daily basis. We've always taken hare here in our competition testing. We moved to taking it on race day as well last year. We were concerned that due to COVID, there may be a gap in terms of our out of competition testing, which had to be suspended in common with many. But that hare testing now, it's a regular common occurrence. You asked about the time scale. If you think about it in terms of a scale, really, blood will always show you a very quick time scale and will particularly pick up on certain substances. Urine are slightly longer and hair longer still. Taken to its extreme, if you were to analyse the entire length of a tail hair, for example, you could be there for years. We're interested in a shorter period of time than that, but nonetheless, it's measured in months, not days or weeks.
Can you talk about the procedure when you take a test, where it goes, who tests it, and the background to those laboratories?
Sure. All our samples are tested at LGC Laboratory in Newmarket. We ship them. We have quite a complex shipping system that gets them across there in good times, that they're in good condition, therefore the best possible chance of finding anything should it be there. We, as I said, sample on the race course and off the race course. That contract has been in place because LGC won the contract for coming up 4 years ago now. LGC are one of five IFHA, so International Federation of Horse Racing Authorities, certified laboratories in the world. That means they're one of the five best racing labs in the world. They don't stand still either in the same way that we don't. So their research program is extensive. Their collaboration with other authorities and other experts in the field is extensive. And we tap into all of that. It was one of the reasons they won the contract.
Are you as sure as you can be in your position that there is not an issue with the administration of steroids in Ireland?
I am, and I want to do more. We will always want to do more. As I said, we won't stand still. There's more testing to be done, more horses to be tested. But that will always be the case for any anti-doping authority. If we look at what's happening across the water to the west, it's the same there. It's the same if you look to the east. Everybody needs to keep moving to be one step ahead. And I'm absolutely confident that we're in that position.
Because as night follows day, athletes of all descriptions will always try and get some sort of an edge, which is why you need a strong and robust regulator. When horses come to Royal Ascot to compete this week, and I asked Jim Bolger the same question, do you believe that those horses will be racing entirely cleanly?
I do, and we collaborate regularly, routinely with the BHA. We exchange information, we exchange intelligence. If we had any reason to believe otherwise, the BHA would have known about it if not second to us. So we have absolute confidence.
Jim,
same as the sales. We had the sales last week here. British buyers over here can have complete confidence that the animals they're buying are coming from a clean place.
Jim and I talk quite extensively about intelligence-led testing. Is that something you're going to do more of?
We've always done it, so it's nothing new. To be honest, the developments in 2021, which you know we are excited about, the authorised officer piece is a big one, but we've always done intelligence-led and risk-based. So there's no point going into a place really on a random basis. That is a form of strategy, but it's not the strategy we adopt. It's risk-based, it's intelligence-led. that's something I developed with the team at BHA when I was there, and it's something we do here. I don't know if you're aware, but we work with the same intelligence system as the BHA. We collaborate with them directly. So again, there's a pool of information there that we use routinely and regularly. If anybody, you know, at the end of the day, the chemistry can be fantastic, the sampling can be fantastic, but you're right, it is all about intelligence. We've had a confidential hotline in place now since 2015. That is regularly used, reviewed, and we act on whatever we find in there in terms of information. Well, it's assessed, and then obviously we act on it if we believe it to be appropriate.
Well, Cornelius, yesterday the IHRB were reluctant to comment too much. I think Jim Bolger's fresh comments moved them, and Dennis Egan issued a statement last night, and Lynn Hillier has been a little more full in what she's just told me. What did you make of that?
Well, you know, you can have all the unparalleled, all the testing, all the intelligence, all the hair tests, all the soothing words, you should have confidence. But the fact is that one of the biggest names in Irish racing, currently, you know, as big a name as there is, doesn't have confidence, does he? You know, so what's happening here is the is the board effectively saying that Jim Bolger is wrong, in which case, you know, he's been saying these type of things since October in increasingly forceful ways. You know, does it get to a stage where they've got to really turn around to Jim Bolger and say, look, we believe this is what we're doing, you're wrong, if you go on repeating this, you know, are we going to bring a disrepute charge against you? You know, we've nearly got to that type of situation. I don't think the soothing words it was really interesting listening to Lynn there. She, you know, I'm sure she believes that they are doing everything they possibly can. But if you talk to anyone involved in Irish racing, they're not as confident as she believes that people should be. And Jim Bolger is clearly not confident at all. So I just don't think the type of statement that Dennis Egan came up with earlier in the week or last night, and those type of soothing words, they are soothing. But you know, the fact is that not everyone believes that is their situation. So by talking about Lance Armstrong, by using earlier on in the, or late last year, the expression drugs cheats, by using some quite incendiary language from Jim Bolger, you know, that those statements, I just don't know that they're enough, because you know, either the regulatory board is correct and Jim Bolger is wrong, or Jim Bolger is correct and the board needs to do more. I just can't see that the situation can just simply stay where it is at the moment with those soothing words. I think they've got to do more. Quite what the more is will certainly involve talking to Jim Bolger.
And now I've got your emoji, Cornelius.
All right. What do you think?
Just arrived. So this is a runner in the St. James's Palace, is it?
Yeah.
Three mountains and 10 trees, as far as I can see. There are mountain trees, mountains.
Stretch the word mountain.
I've got it. I think I've got it. Is it Highland Avenue?
It's Highland Avenue. I have to say that the very distinguished Scottish trainer Nick Alexander got it quicker than you.
Well, I'd hope so. I'd hope so.
On the basis he's not a million miles from the Highlands as well.
Listen, I love Highland Avenue. In the end, I went for Chindit because I thought he was there was more juice in his.
He's the other one. I think they're the two really intriguing. You know, it's a thoroughly absorbing race, isn't it? And in many ways, if Poetic Flair was to come and absolutely slam everybody and shout and scream how good he is, then that would be good for the flat racing season. Great for the Jim Bolger operation. But clearly there are other contenders. I detect Battleground being quite talked up. That on different ground, that one's going to be a different kettle of fish. And Chindit, I just again in these conditions. I think he ran pretty well in the Guineas, and he clearly prior to that had got a pretty much blemish free record. But that Heron Stakes, as far as Highland Avenue was concerned, it was pretty soft ground that day, and also I think things didn't quite go as right as everybody would have liked them to have gone. So the chance of a reversal in form there is distinct. So you've got all that Guinness form to have a look at, and the Heron Stakes form to look at, and I think they come together as a really heady cocktail, which is the St. James's Palace Stakes this year.
Well, funny things can happen, even at Royal Ascot, when you think that just the favourites turn up and win, and it's all about Frankie Dettori and Ryan Moore and John Gosden and Sir Michael Stout and Wesley Ward. And 3 years ago, Accidental Agent won the Queen Anne Stakes at 33-1 and did so in fine style as well, having run an excellent sixth in the Lockinge. He's trained by Eve Johnson-Horton. He's still going strong. It would be fair to say, Eve, that he's had his ups and downs in the interim, but how much of a kick does it give you to bring him back to Ascot today?
It gives a huge kick. He's in better form than I've had him since he won. He's in the best form I've ever had him in since he won last time. And yes, he's had his ups and downs, but I think he's had little problems and niggles. And we sorted out his wind, which has definitely helped him. And he's moving really well and seems very happy.
Because for the most sort of genuine horse in training, suddenly this non-appearance out of the starting stalls was a bit of a shock to us all, and it must have given you a mass amount of head scratching. What came to light in the end?
We had a lot of theories and absolutely nothing concrete, but I think horses don't do that for no reason, so something must have been hurting him somewhere that I couldn't find. I think we've probably found it now. You know, he's just had done little tweaks, given him plenty of time. He had a huge break and done a lot of physio work with him. And as I say, given him the wind up. And hopefully that will never happen again.
And that was a promising enough comeback run at Newbury. There are other targets, I guess, you could have gone for this week. So why did you roll the big dice again?
Well, to win the Hunt Cup of 106 when you're 7, you have to run for probably about 115, I think. And if you run to 115, you're placed in the Queen Anne. The Hunt Cup is got so many runners. There's bound to be, you know, we thought there bound to be hard luck stories. Here, he just gets a straight run at it.
And you think he's in fantastic form. He's 150-1, you were telling me, in a place. You've got to have had a few quid on.
Well, I've had my huge bet of £10 each way.
You don't need much on at that price.
I know. Listen, I get that he's the outsider. I get that he's 66-1. But I think 150-1 about a horse who's a proven Ascot performer and ran well last time is insulting, to say the least.
And I just can't believe it's been 3 years since that day. Just take us back there a little bit and tell everybody just what it meant to you, to your mother who owns and bred this horse, and to everyone around you.
It meant everything. You know, I was desperate to have a winner at Royal Ascot. And for this horse that was born and bred on the place, and nobody wanted to buy, and my mum bred him, just the whole thing was amazing. And I had the whole family there. And it was really emotional, and it just meant everything.
It's just so good to see him back today. You've got other runners this week. Who would you be pinning your main hopes on?
Well, they've all got each way chances, I think. We've got Hyanna in the last today. She's missed consistent, and given the run of the race, should finish there or thereabouts. Chipotle in the Windsor Castle, it's a throw of the dice. You know, he's probably not quite good enough, but he deserves his place there. But I think Jumbie will go really well in the Commonwealth Cup. I think he's a proper horse.
I mean, Cornelius, what are you most looking forward to outside the St. James's Palace?
Palace Pier is clearly gaining an awesome reputation. Frankie Dettori, so associated with Royal Ascot, on board. I see your sponsor, Fitzdares, has him quite, as do all bookmakers, I think, favourite to be the top jockey during the week again. I think he's got 6 rides today. John Gosden's been joking that's nearly as many rides as he's had all season, which is obviously a slight exaggeration, but he's been very selective about his rides this year. But riding in plenty of races today, and really looking forward to Frankie today and all the way through the week. Coventry Stakes, always good when Wesley Ward pops up, and with a really intriguing contender this year as well. But the whole race looks, you know, with the Ward runner Coffee Maker. I would I was with the trainer Hugo Palmer last week, who insisted on calling it Coffee Maker, but I think Coffee. Will you be calling it Coffee Maker?
Coffee Maker.
Coffee, yeah, absolutely. But that race, you know, with the couple of Gosden runners, with the Acropolis for Aidan O'Brien, with Donica with an interesting contender, with Hugo Palmer's horse, Ebro River, looks terrific at 3:05, very informative. And I love the King Stand Stake. I love the two big sprints of the week. Battash hasn't run since last summer, when that memorable race at York, when Kea Moro really, who's in the field, which is in the field as well, really threw it down to him. Battash, for whom, I know he won the race last year, but for which Ascot has not always been necessarily ideal. So you've got horses like Extravagant Kid, intriguing with Dettori riding, like Oxted, like King's Lynn for the Queen, like Winter Power in there as well, like Kea Moro too. So that looks pretty intriguing. And then later on in the day, right towards the end of the afternoon, really looking forward to Cape Gentleman in action with Rachel Blackmore. Well, she's certainly a very welcome addition to the team of riders taking part during the week. So, yeah, there really is something for everybody. There is a lot to get really excited about. And one media colleague of mine was saying to me yesterday, I've only got six, you know, we're so tight for space at the moment with the Euros and all sorts of other things going on. I've only got 600 words to try and squeeze everything into. Well, that is going to be quite a task, because the fact of the matter is there is plenty going on, plenty of really good stuff going on, not just today, right the way through the week. And I dare say on Thursday, there's a possibility, as well as Stradivarius, the weather will be a big talking point, because we're definitely being warned about the chance of thunderstorms Wednesday night into Thursday daytime, which could just add an extra dimension to the whole thing.
We also talk about the impact that this, as a government trial event, Royal Ascot allowing 12,000 people in a day, will have on the remainder of the month. Now we've got another month of COVID restrictions to endure, and potentially costly ones as well.
Yeah, I think the Secretary of State's coming on Friday, isn't he? So he'll be able to see Oliver Dowden, see everything close up. I think racing, very confident that everything will work well. Ascot has worked extremely hard, along with other stakeholders, other agencies, etc., the Racecourse Association, the British Horse Racing Authority, and others, to get Ascot into the experiment. So I think people are sort of quietly confident, because those, particularly today, when you get a lot of racing aficionados, really want this all to work as well. So people, now I've been talking to friends who are lucky enough to have been going today and tomorrow, and everybody talking about making certain they got their test, their lateral flow test done on time, and sent off the information and got the letter back from the NHS so they can show that. And I think there are one or two other hoops to jump through as well. So everybody, whether it's the Royal Ascots and the authorities and the associations, they want it to work, but so do the fans, because you know, the news from the British Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, that next Monday is not going to be quite the Freedom Day that people were predicting, is clearly going to impact on horse racing. Not sustainable for a £4 billion industry, is how the British Horse Racing Authority put it in a statement after Boris Johnson's announcement. So it means that the hope that you were going to have pretty much unlimited crowds into the July meeting at Newmarket, the Eclipse fixture at Sandown, also to be able to plan for Glorious Goodwood at the end of July. That at the moment is not happening in quite the way that people were hoping that it might do. But I was struck, as I'm sure you have been, by one or two of the statements, the other wordings in those statements. Julie Harrington, Chief Executive of the BHA, many of our racegoers will be frustrated by this delay. We are doing all we can to work with national and local authorities to maximise the number of people allowed to attend race meetings in safety. And David Armstrong, of the Chief Executive of the Racecourse Association, the industry will continue to press hard for racecourses to receive the same 10,000 capacity limits as seated stadia. And this is going to be the point, isn't it? That these organisations, racing organisations, which have demonstrated themselves to be tremendous diplomats over the last 12 months or so when dealing with government, need to continue to be tremendous diplomats, because you know, the fact is that Ascot Racecourse or Newmarket Racecourse or Goodwood Racecourse or Hexham or Musselburgh or, well, no, Musselburgh doesn't count because it's in Scotland, but, you know, all these racecourses have got so much open space that to be treated in exactly the same way as people being, in inverted commas, crammed into a seated stadium does seem a little bit harsh. So I'm sure everyone will be working hard to try and convince Oliver Dowden and convince his officials that racing should just have a few sort of bits of relaxation around the edges.
Well, there should at least this week be some relaxation around the edges at Ascot, but it's important that everybody looks their best. And helping them to do that, I'm very pleased to say that Scarlett Gray joins me from Glow and Dry. Now, Scarlett, you're looking great yourself, but just tell everybody what you do during Ascot Week and how you help everybody.
So we're here this week with all the Sky Sports presenters. So we come in early doors, we've been here since like 6, make sure they all look great, do the hair and makeup. We're just up there on the left. So yeah, we just ensure that the girls look camera ready, Ascot ready. But also it's just so nice this year. We've all been trapped in the house for 12 months. I think all the ladies are just so excited to like, we've forgotten how to do our own hair and makeup. So it's so nice to sit there, get it done, have fun with our fashion again, and just be here in the sunshine today.
And I've been looking around as everyone's been walking past me, and I'm sitting here in the gardens at the back of the grandstand. It's quite quiet at the moment, but just the huge smiles on people's faces. It's really infectious.
I know. I've been up since 5 a.m. and as soon as I hit this race course, my smile was like, okay, I'm not tired. How can you be in a bad mood? The sun's shining. We're out the house, we're here. I don't think any of us really expected we were going to be here this year. So just to be here is just an absolute delight and pleasure, isn't it, really?
And I know you do a lot of TV and film, makeup, costume, etc. Do you find this week is just a little bit different from anything else you do?
Yeah, I mean, it's a certain look for Royal Ascot, and it's the look I kind of like, which is like the no makeup makeup. Like, it's very natural, it's very elegant, it's very sophisticated, it's very, and also, like you said, you need your makeup. It's different. Like, I know the Instagram phase, I mean, you don't have a filter when you're at Royal Ascot. People are seeing you face to face, the sun shining, it's bright, it's hot. So it's a completely different look, and like you said, it's maintaining that look throughout the day as well to ensure that you've done your makeup right from the start so it lasts the whole entire day, because it's a long day to the end.
I need to come and see you tomorrow, I think.
And there's prep, like you said, this morning. It's quite funny when you see us at the start of how we look at the start to the end. We've got the eye patches underneath, prepping for the long day. We've got all the kind of long wear makeup to make sure that it stays, but on days like today, you don't want a heavy makeup look. You want to look fresh, you want to look glowing, you want to look just very like you haven't really made too much of an effort, to be honest.
I'm going to do my best not to have a heavy makeup look today. What I need to do, however, is avoid the
sunburn.
The eyeliner
is a bit heavy this morning, I'm not going to lie. We might take that down a little bit.
Scarlett, thanks for chatting to me. Have a great week here at Ascot.
Thank you very much. Have a lovely week.
Well, thank you to Scarlett. It is Tuesday, of course, so we go around the bloodstock world this week, no exception, even though it is Royal Ascot. In fact, we should be concentrating more on the bloodstock world, and we do that with our friends at Weatherby's, their Stallion book and their Global Stallion app. I've been trying to pin Tony Rogers from Early Stud down for a long time now. I'm very pleased to welcome him to the podcast. And Tony, you are now running a stud that has such wonderful history and heritage, not just in Ireland, but globally. Thanks to the exploits of your father, who was a legendary figure in the industry, and not to mention your mother, who is still very much running the stud alongside you. Tell me a little bit about the beginnings of Early Stud.
Thanks, Nick. Thanks for having me. Yeah, the beginnings of Early Stud were my father set it up after the war. He was stationed initially during the war, and he set up racing out there actually initially after the wars, and did quite well and made a bit of money by doing that. And then he came to Ireland. His grandfather was an amateur rider. His father trained in Ireland, and he came back to Ireland. And he's in the early 50s. He set up Early Stud. I think he syndicated his first horse in the late 50s, but that's where it started. He always had a love for horses. It was bred into him, and he set it up from nothing, pretty much.
Is it fair to say that he was one of those people who just had an instinctive eye, not just for a horse, but for the sort of commercial opportunity of a stallion, which in the 1950s was pretty amazing?
Yeah, definitely. He was forward thinking. He would. Yeah, I mean, he bought a farm in the early 70s in New Zealand, and I think he was the first person to shuttle. It was a lot harder back then. It was harder to run a farm in New Zealand back then as well. But he did have. He looked hugely to the future, and not just 5-6 years down the line, 15-20 years down the line. And he was a pioneer. Yeah, I mean, I didn't know him that. Unfortunately, I didn't know him that well. He died when I was rather young, but. No, he was. He started the whole thing, and he did an amazing job. Amazing man.
And your mother's input over the last many decades has been nothing short of astounding. A hugely respected figure in the bloodstock world, Sonia.
Yes, I was very lucky that she carried the whole thing on when my father passed away when I was 12, and she. It wasn't easy for her. It was not easy at all, but it was a sort of situation, sink or swim, and she did very well. And she had her mother bred horses, Liz Burke, her brother, Sir Thomas Pilkington, breeds. So, it's in the family, her family as well. So she did know a lot about it when she took it over, but it was a huge thing to take on when my father passed.
When you look through those stud books, when you look through pedigrees now, and you see some of the great stallions that your family were involved with, particularly I'm thinking about Habitat, who was actually a breed shaper, how does that make you feel?
I'm proud of what my father did. Very proud of what he did, and how he changed. He saw Ireland as a place. With the horsemen and the land and everything, was a place that he could breed some of the best racehorses in the world. And he was more interested probably in the stallion side of it, buying and selling, trading stallions. And it's the same today. They come and go very quickly. And when my mother took it over, she tried the stallions and I tried to help with the stallions, but really we decided to move towards the broodmare band, and that's where our passion is now. We take a few shares in stallions, we support the stallions, but really it's the broodmares that we are concentrating on now.
And you've done wonderfully well over the last several decades, and you're always popping up with a good horse, a classic horse here and there, from Bachelor Duke through a great favourite of mine, Petrushka, to Intense Focus, and more recently Skitter Scatter, small but perfectly formed, and Lismore just a couple of weeks ago in the Henry II. That must have been a lot of fun. I know you were at Sandown to see that.
I was pretty relaxed, actually. Usually I get a bit uptight before the races, but I was very relaxed with a friend. And wasn't expecting too much, and those are the times when it usually can happen. But that's what it's all about. It's the breeding the good racehorses. Hopefully Valeria Messalina can run well this week at Ascot. She was another one that she had a little problem, so we couldn't sell her, so we raced her. We got lucky with her, but generally these pedigrees, the ones that have been in our family. 4, 5, 6 generation, it just gives you a little bit more information on how to breed. It's not easy, but a little bit more information on how to breed a decent racehorse and what they work with.
And Tony, when this is in your blood, it never leaves you. And are you driving forward to continue early stud for generations to come?
Oh, I hope so. Yeah. I still love it. I enjoy good days and bad days with the livestock, but it is a passion. It's always been in my blood. It's sort of and my kids seem to enjoy. I've got a couple of little girls who ride. I'm not pushing my children into it, which my mother never forced me into it. It's got to come from within. It's a passion, and I'm very lucky that I'm doing what I love.
And so say all of us. Tony Rogers, thanks so much.
Thank you, Nick. Thank you.
All right, then. So it's day one of Royal Ascot. Time to welcome into the show, as we will every day this week, Jamie Hart, the racing director for the Tote, to talk to me about Whirlpool, how many countries Royal Ascot is being broadcast in, bet in, and how big this could grow this week and what you could get out of it. Jamie, morning. Exciting day.
Yeah, very exciting day. First day of the Royal Ascot Festival, and the one of the main kind of feature of our Whirlpool days over the season in the UK.
Why is today such a big deal for you?
Well, it's our third Royal Ascot for the World Pool. This is an initiative set up by Hong Kong so that all of the world's pools and totes can club together, co-mingle all of the money that's being bet into these races, because historically people used to run their own kind of local pools on these big races, big overseas races, which meant that we had a lot of pools that weren't that big because it was overseas racing for those other jurisdictions. And we just thought, well, there's no real point to that. We should all get together, make one big pool. Obviously, it generates more money for racing, gets more money for the race courses that are hosting these big events. And that's what it's all about, driving up the prize money in a time when, you know, we haven't had that many people at the races. It's been a real shot in the arm for Ascot, certainly having been first cab off the rank to get involved with the World Pool, and all power to Ascot and to Hong Kong Jockey Club for making this work. And of course, everybody in the UK can bet directly into the World Pool just by through the UK Tote, which is available. You can come direct to the UK Tote, or you can bet with your normal bookmaker. Most of the bookmakers, either whether you're in a betting shop or online, have access to UK Tote Tote products. I'm sure if you've had your play spot and things like that with your bookmaker, it's the same connection. So you'll be able to bet directly into the Hong Kong pools.
Tell me this, races like the Ascot Stakes, the Gold Cup, the Queen Alexandra, how much action do you see in the World Pool for races that are essentially totally alien to the rest of the world?
Well, the Ascot Stakes is a particular interest because I was on a Hong Kong podcast this week, which is being shown over or listened to over there, and they only wanted to talk about three races today and one other race. So they said, right, we're going to start on the Tuesday. We'll start off with the three Group Ones, and then we want to talk about Rachel Blackmore. And so I think it's going to be very interesting just how short she might be in the Ascot Stakes, because over there they've even given her a Chinese name so that everybody can kind of refer to her without having to pronounce Rachel Blackmore. So that could be one of the really interesting spots of the day. If Rachel Blackmore is the story out in Hong Kong, she could be a fraction of the price she is with the bookies over here, which of course, with the old seesaw of value in the tote, means everything else is value.
So it just goes to show that those stories drive the worldwide betting more than anything else, even somewhere you think was fairly hard-nosed about gambling, like Hong Kong.
No, it's the human stories that really reach out and cross borders. And so it's going to be, everybody needs to have their phones open, checking the bookies and checking the tote around the Ascot Stakes. I think it will be one of the most interesting races from a World Pool point of view of the week.
Well, thanks to all my guests today. Just a reminder that our friends at FitzDares have an offer for you, which is for today, Tuesday only. Do bear that in mind, depending on when you're listening to this podcast. If you back a winner at 2-1 or bigger on Tuesday at Ascot, you get a free bet to your original stake. And certainly at various points in the last 24 hours, Batash, for example, has been bigger than 2-1. Significant conditions do apply. Cornelius is with me now. Cornelius, there's no way you're going to be tipping me anything under 2-1 today.
No, I'm going to mention mentions to two horses. I really like Highland Avenue and the St. James's Palace Stakes, but really looking forward to that race. It's for the 420, so it's the centrepiece of the day, and it looks as though it's going to be a real cracker. And I'm definitely going to mention, as far as the King's Stand Stakes is concerned, at a much bigger price, Her Majesty's runner, King's Lynn. King's Lynn is a horse very much on the up. No Royal Procession this year for the second year running, and it's slightly unclear when Her Majesty will be attending. But the fact of the matter is that she has, 10 or 11 different horses entered during the week, so there must be a good opportunity we see her. I think probably more likely we'll see her at Ascot than she has an entry at Redcar on Friday and Hexham on Sunday, perhaps. Not at those two venues, but really looking forward to seeing the Queen, who is as crucial a part, perhaps even more crucial a part of this whole week than any other person, certainly any other person, and quite likely the equine players as well. So King's Lynn in the King's Stand Stakes. Looking forward to seeing that. But Highland Avenue for the St. James's Palace Stakes.
Good. Okay, Cornelius, thanks so much. Thank you very much for listening. It is day one of Royal Ascot, Tuesday, June the 15th. We'll be podcasting from here all week. Thanks so much. We will be back to review it all and check in with you again tomorrow. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you in association with Fitzdares, the Racehorse Owners Association, and Thoroughbred Racing Commentary.